Welcome to Our Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with me today I have Nick McAllister, the Executive Director of the Friends of Laurel Hill Cemetery and West Laurel Hill Cemetery, both fabulous cemeteries. But today we're going to be talking about the original Laurel Hill Cemetery. Welcome.
Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, I'm looking forward to this. The cemetery pops up in so many amazing ways. Well, for the old joke, everybody's dying to get in there.
Right.
It is a living part of Philadelphia. It's a great monument to great people. It tells amazing stories, but it's also a place that a lot of us go to for recreation, enjoyment, and education all through the years. Full disclosure here, I am not only a member of the Friends, but thanks to a show that I did long, long ago, I am a guide there. If I jump in and answer all of my own questions, Nick, forgive me today.
Not a problem. The tours are actually one of the ways that we get people to come to the cemetery. It's one of the things that we do that which is trying to go back and teach people about the history of the place, try to get them excited so they want to come back. The cemetery, as you know, was created, of course, as a final resting place, but from the time it started founded in 1836, at that time period, the late 19th century, people came to the cemetery not just to visit their loved ones, but to visit others of famous people, to look at the trees, to see the sculptures, to picnic. They had a much healthier, probably, relationship with death. And the Victorians really used the cemetery as a place of recreation before the public park system ever existed. And so part of what we're doing now with the Friends of Laurel Hill Cemetery is bringing people to the cemetery kind of in that way, in the spirit of the Victorians. And we have tours and programs and even just staying open 7 days a week, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., to allow people to walk and recreate and picnic and bike take their bicycles. It's just a great way for the Friends to be able to keep the place open and treat it as it used to be treated.
I want to give us a little bit about the history of it, because this was a fairly novel idea at the time for Philadelphia.
Certainly. Laurel Hill Cemetery is, as you may know, is about 4 miles outside of Center City, which would have been in 1836 quite a distance. Before that, people were mostly buried in churchyards in what's now Center City. There were small patches of land with pretty limited amount of space, and the rapidly developing, growing, thriving city of Philadelphia was being built all around these cemeteries. And so when John J. Smith, one of our four founders, went to go visit a young daughter of his who had died, he actually couldn't find her grave, it sounds horrible and a tragedy, but it really wasn't as uncommon as you might think. Back at that time, families didn't really own the property where they buried their loved ones. It would belong to the church, and for his, it would be the Quakers, the Friends at the time is where she was buried. But they would have owned that property and could do whatever they wanted with it. If they wanted to sell the property, they could do that too, which has happened on many, many occasions in Philadelphia. And so the conditions were such, again, the city was becoming much more industrial. It was not very clean. It was prone to flooding between the rivers. And so you often had graves which were in just horrible condition and almost unrecognizable from one visit to the other. So, of course, John J. Smith went to visit his daughter, could not find her, and decided to do something about it. And that's why he founded Laurel Hill Cemetery. And what it offered, what the unique thing it offered at the time, was that it was space far outside of the city where you had open air. It was an area where the family could buy a piece of property and own it in perpetuity, and then could do whatever they wanted with it. They could put up a monument, they could put up an obelisk, they could put a small flush headstone, whatever they wanted to do. They could treat that property in the way as if they actually owned it. It was novel, I think, at the time, especially in Philadelphia. And although there are other cemeteries, and that's kind of the mode nowadays, Laurel Hill has remained kind of the premier signature cemetery of its kind in the area.
And it's the first to receive a landmarks status, too, wasn't it?
First cemetery in the country to receive National Historic Landmark status. It's something we're very proud of.
And rightfully so. It was only predated by just one other like it, and it was really cool. John J. Smith was a scholar, and he was the president of the Philadelphia Library Company, and he was interested in architecture and also in horticulture.
Yeah, he was I guess an amateur horticulturalist technically, but he was very talented. Actually, it ends up, I think he was on the class of gentleman scholars who kind of they studied whatever they could. He was a librarian by training, and he had a deep interest in horticulture. wrote a lot of text about it, and that was one of the things that the cemetery would eventually become. He planted something like close to 3,000 trees within the first decade of the cemetery's existence, and what he wanted it to be, in addition to a resting place, was kind of like a park, although parks didn't really exist in the same way at the time. And it was certainly intended to be an arboretum, a place where you could go and see a variety of trees, some very rare specimen trees, things that you wouldn't be able to normally find on the streets. He brought that to the cemetery, and so people would get a chance to see them and obviously learn about them as well. And aesthetically, it was a place, a place of beauty.
And he hired John Notman, who was not really, he wasn't well known at all. In fact, he was mostly more of a construction guy at the time, working in brick, to design it.
John Notman, who went on to as the architect of many churches in Philadelphia, some private residents, he is also buried at Laurel Hill Cemetery. This was his first really major commission. He was actually a Scotsman. He had only recently arrived from Scotland. I think he was just in his 20s, I believe, when he got the commission for Laurel Hill Cemetery. But he had a vision for the place. He designed the gatehouse and helped to design the landscape and the plan, the layout of the original tract of land in the cemetery. And he did a great job.
And like Père Lachaise, when it started, the first thing they did was marketing. And they went out and got Heloise and Abelard, the famous priest and nun, and put them there because everybody wanted to see them. And I thought it was fascinating that Smith, too, came up with that same idea and make it kind of a quasi tribute to our great founders of this nation. And he's doing this in the 1830s, and he's already got an idea that this is the way to get people to want to come there and buy land.
Absolutely. And there was no better place in the country at the time than Philadelphia. I mean, there was so much happening, so much invention, so much creation, so many really important people. He was able to secure people who had died long before the cemetery was founded to be moved there, reinterred at Laurel Hill. People like David Rittenhouse, people like Hugh Mercer, who was a Revolutionary War hero and friend of George Washington. People like Thomas McKean, one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence. Isaac Hull, the Commodore of Old Ironsides. Just really important, nationally really important people. And so what it did is it led the cemetery to also become something of a museum, a place where people would kind of come for almost a pilgrimage to pay tribute, pay honor to some of these really heroes of America. And I think he was successful in that. And that did, of course, lead one of the things that led to a really successful venture. And the cemetery very quickly was successful, almost immediately was successful. He took a major risk, he and his business partners, but it proved, we're still here today, still doing burials, still selling property, and it's thanks to him and his vision.
You know, it is fun to go through it because people forget that at that time, Philadelphia was the largest city in the Americas. This was a major metropolitan area, and it led in invention, but also in publishing. This was a major place for the industry, and it affected and influenced the entire country with the material that was coming out of here, not just the newspapers, but the magazines, Godey's and Saturday Evening Post, etc.
Absolutely. And of course, it's no surprise that people associated with those publications are buried at Laurel Hill Cemetery. The Lippincotts, Louis Godey.
Yeah, and don't forget Louisa Curtis, who was the brains behind the Saturday Evening Post and the Ladies Home Journal.
That's right. Absolutely. No, it goes on and on. And because Philadelphia is a center not just of publishing, but so much industry. You have these major industrialist figures, people like Henry Diston, who maybe you don't know about today, but your grandfather probably has a Diston saw in his toolbox. The Diston made a fortune at that time creating the most durable hand saws possible. And this is at a time when westward expansion was still happening and there was pioneer days and everyone needed a good, sturdy hand saw. People like Baldwin of Baldwin Locomotive Works, who was building trains and creating new inventions. People like the Widners, the Elkins, people majorly involved in trains and transportation. All sorts of figures like that who decided to choose Laurel Hill as their final resting place.
And it is fascinating. You see the rise and fall of the city through these amazing personalities. And they are, some of the most amazing people are there. And then, of course, you got some of the most notorious Vegas are there as well. Singleton Mercer, who accused Mahone Heberton of seducing his sister, murdered him, and then ended up getting off by the then novel defense of insanity, temporary insanity.
That's right. And it was, at the time, a very, very famous trial. Everyone was paying attention to it, obviously before television, but newspapers coming out. And I believe it was George Lepard's Quaker City is about that trial, or partly about that trial, which is a big, huge, you know, really important novel at the time.
And it captured the entire country's interest. They were fascinated by it, like Charles Peterson and Thomas Howard, his son. He disappears in Atlantic City, and the Pinkerton Detective Agency, one of the first times that the most of the country had ever heard of it, is sent to look for him. And it ended tragically, but with a fascinating story about his widow and her final years. And I can't give that away. I'm giving away too much here. But the story of the Pinkertons' search for his son, again, people across the country were following this. And the same thing for the Potters. We remember the Potter family because they were passengers on the Titanic. But before the Titanic sailed, Wilson, their son, had been in Alaska when his father took ill. And the newspapers carried stories about his coming home to be at his father's deathbed. And you can see them when you do research, the stories about him missing the packet ship out of Juneau, and oh, the special train was sent to pick him up in Kansas City, and he's made it home in time. These stories captivated the country in those years.
Absolutely. And you know, I think it goes on and on and on. I think that, as we mentioned, the city, the fortunes of this city and country are matched by the fortunes of the cemetery itself. The heyday, the peak, was a great time for this country. After the Civil War, which took such a huge toll on the country, the cemetery also it took a huge toll on the cemetery as well. And into the 20th century, when some of the industry left Philadelphia and things changed, that after the Depression, the cemetery also kind of took a hit and was not. People were no longer visiting. People were not spending as much time at cemeteries. People were not being buried there as often as they were. And that's why the Friends was actually founded in 1978. It was after a period of kind of some neglect of the cemetery. It was some individuals who came together who wanted to see it saved, to make sure that the stories of all these people were able to be continue to be told, and make sure that the place was in proper condition, which it hadn't been at the time. So 40 years later, we have this beautiful site once again, where we are very active. We have lots and lots, tens of thousands of visitors every year. People who, yes, many want to hear the stories. Some just want to come to the site to walk around, to relax, to bike, to walk their dog, to take in the beauty of the Arboretum, which still exists. And it's really, it's in a remarkable condition. And if you've never been, I would certainly encourage you to come out.
And you know what? We didn't mention where it's located.
So the cemetery is located, the address is 3822 Ridge Avenue. It's actually located between Ridge Avenue and Kelly Drive, somewhere between Strawberry Mansion and East Falls, just overlooking the beautiful Schuylkill River.
And it is beautiful. I mean, the views from up there are absolutely amazing. And so many people will come just to look at the river. They're hiking or they're biking, and they come up and they see it and they stay and they find out how much fun there is there. But if you want more information, thelaurelhillcemetery.org. That's where you go. thelaurelhillcemetery.org. You can search and find stories about who is buried there, find out about events that are coming up, particular tours that you might be interested in attending, and find out information about becoming a member. And that is, again, thelaurelhillcemetery.org. Nick McAllister, the executive director of the Friends of Laurel Hill Cemetery and West Laurel Hill Cemetery, my guest today. I'm Laura Lewis, and this is our Delaware Valley. And, you know, I love that when I mention the tours, there is a tour for absolutely everybody. There's a lover's tour around Valentine's Day. There are scoundrel tours. There are ghostly events around Halloween. But if you have an interest, you've got a tour for it.
Absolutely. And we have a great number of tour guides, almost getting close to 50 tour guides. And one of the great things that the tour guides all bring to their tours is that they all do their own research and they all bring their own interests. And so we've been able to create a lot of really unique tours. And as I've said, pretty much every organization in the city of Philadelphia or in the region is associated with this place. So if you come with one idea and you just follow that thread, you can build your own tours, which we encourage people to do. But really, we are connected to, you name it, the zoo, the Franklin Institute, the Academy of Natural Sciences. People from all these places, lots and lots of people from all these places are buried there, and their history is preserved at the cemetery. It's one of the things that we do. Obviously, we have property. We sell graves. But we also are this kind of the stewards of their stories. And that's, how, I think, how that comes through in our tours, which is one aspect of the programming that the Friends of Laurel Hill Cemetery does. We also do lots of entertainment. We do performances, concerts, plays, movies. We have a really wide array, something for everyone, I would say.
Well, go through the calendar. What have we got? Of course, every late summer is always the ghostly circus. But then getting into September, there's a lot of events coming up then, too.
Absolutely. So the fall is typically has been our the peak of our season. We do have, throughout the summer and into the fall, we have a movie series. We call it Cinema in the Cemetery. We've had so many great movies already this year, including Young Frankenstein, Disney's Coco. That's one of my favorite events, is to see all the people in the cemetery. People come and hundreds of people come out, bring a picnic, bring a blanket, sit and watch on a really large screen a great movie of our choice. We also have some events for the Friends that are fundraisers, including the Rest in Peace 5K run, which is going to be in its 11th year this year. We get several hundred runners to come run through the cemetery. It's entirely inside the cemetery. We have over 3 miles of paved roads, and people dress in costume. There's a reception afterwards with beers, and it's just a lot of fun. And then the most important event for me anyway is our Gravediggers Ball, which is really we are able to raise a good deal of money to help support the work of the Friends. And every year we try to switch the venue. It's not at the cemetery, but this year it's actually going to be at the Mutter Museum at the College of Physicians, and that's going to be on October 18th. And this is our 15th annual Gravediggers Ball. I know, Laura, you've been in the past, but it's a really great time. It's a black tie masquerade event. We have entertainment. We have an auction. We have all sorts of things you'd expect out of a gala, and it's right around Halloween, so that usually adds to the festivity.
Who comes to the cemetery? Now, these great events are great for families. There is every year there's a hearse car show, for crying out loud. There's the Macabre Arts Festival. That's always fun. You have the Ghostly Circus I mentioned. So all these events go on. But during the rest of the year, who likes to come out to the cemetery?
There's no one type, I would say. It really is something for everyone. People... Of course, there's people who come to visit their families who were buried there. And then we have a lot of people who are what we kind of call casual park visitors. They are biking along the Schuylkill River on the Kelly Drive Trail, and they decide to look up and see the cemetery, and they decide to come on through. People on bike or rollerblades or joggers or walkers. A lot of the neighbors who live nearby come with their dogs and walk their dogs throughout the cemetery. Lots of history hobbyists, certainly people who are they want to visit every single one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence. We're always on their list, of course. People who are real Civil War buffs, people who are leaf peepers, nature lovers, gardeners, arborists. There's certainly plenty of nature, and there's an open space, and there's no. It's protected land, so it's a really great place to see living nature. You know, we have families of foxes living there, plenty of groundhogs, lots and lots of birds use it as a sanctuary. And I think there's a lot of people who come to the cemetery because they're just curious. I myself have always loved cemeteries. I'm a cemetery guy. I grew up playing around in cemeteries, and like many people who we hear from, wherever they go and visit, they always visit the cemetery first. And I think that a lot of people find us that way because we're the place where they can go and connect with the history of the place.
And who actually likes to come to cemeteries? Let's talk about the purpose of the Friends. And I think we've just alluded to it briefly, but what does that accomplish?
So the Friends really help to certainly bring attention to the site. So one of the things the Friends does is to create all of these programs in order to bring people, give them an opportunity to come and visit. Another thing is to really help preserve the site. A lot of the money that we raise from the Friends, which is a 501c3 nonprofit, goes back to the cemetery to help with some of the maintenance, help with some of the restoring and preserving some of the monumentation. There's several buildings in the cemetery which need to be taken care of. And there isn't really the funds available to the cemetery company to do that. And so that's where the Friends jump in and help out with that. That's been the case for the last 41 years since the Friends were founded. So the mission is to preserve, protect, and promote Laurel Hill Cemetery.
Well, with all of that property there, I mean, this is an important part of our natural environment, too, and you're reforesting it.
And we are reforesting it. We plant trees every single year. We have a full-time arborist on staff, or an arboretum manager. We have a horticulturalist who takes care of the gardenings. Kind of there's a whole history of the gardening and the history of cemetery horticulture, which we're trying to preserve. And we actually have some volunteers now who come and tend to the gardens within the cemetery, which are flowers and plants that make up some of the properties within the cemetery. But we do, for the first time in the history of the cemetery, over 180 years, we've done an inventory of all the trees that are at Laurel Hill Cemetery, and we're able to now know what we have. We discovered we have three state champion trees, which means they're the largest of its type in the state. We didn't know we had them before. We now we know what we have so that we can take care of it properly. Plenty of elm trees, which were not being properly treated for Dutch elm disease, now are. We're fortunate that they lasted so long without it, but now that we know what we have, we're able to take care of it, and we're able to bring in new plants so that we can fill in the gaps in our collection. But we are an official certified level 2 arboretum.
What I find fascinating is when you walk among the stones and you make a mention of somebody and it opens up a whole story about the city that you don't really, most people don't even know about. Patterson Lyon, he fought in the Mexican-American War, he fought in the 1812, he fought in the Civil War, but he was also part of the Pennsylvania National Guard that had to come in during the nativism riots in Philadelphia, a terrible dark period in the city. And that story gets told because he's there.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, there are many connections with the Know Nothing riots, including people like Napoleon Lebrun, who was the architect of the Cathedral of Saints Peter and Paul, who famously designed that building around that time. It was in the 1840s when it was being designed, and he made the stained glass windows high enough that a rock couldn't be thrown to break it. He was designing it with in mind. There are other people who led the riots, and they're buried at Laurel Hill Cemetery. But that period, pretty dark period in the 1840s, was very much a part of the fabric of this city. It's part of our history, and that too is represented at Laurel Hill, as well as the good parts.
The good parts, and you can't walk down any lane of Laurel Hill without seeing street names and schools, Gratz, Elverson, Fittler, all of these names that we've all grown up with, and there they are. They were real people. And it also tells great stories about women. We have great scientists. We have Martha Costin, who was the inventor of the Costin flare that is used today.
Right. Plenty of important women who are buried at Laurel Hill. We have our tour guides have been responsible for uncovering a lot of these stories. One of the tricky things with trying to track down biographies of women from the 19th century is that they're often buried are under their husband's name, Mrs. Nick McAllister, as it were, and they don't get their own recognition. And so a lot of our tour guides have put together some great research and found some great stories, a lot of abolitionists. A lot of women were very involved in the abolition of slavery. As you said, some military, famous military heroines, some scientists, some explorers. So we have all sorts of wonderful stories to be told about women in about women as well.
It's interesting, too, when you mentioned that about women being buried under their husbands' names. It does tell you a lot about how women lived in those eras. And you see many dying in childbirth. You see so many babies and very young children. And you realize just how dangerous a time it was. And it's all there. These stories just come alive when you're walking through and you ask a question, well, why are there all these names on this stone? Or why is this stone designed that way? What great story, all of the columns that are there, the obelisks. Well, because when the cemetery was founded, they were building the Washington Monument, and people loved anything Egyptian in those columns. And then suddenly they're not there anymore in the new section. And then it's, well, they ran out of money in Washington. So you learn all these great stories just walking around.
Absolutely. And yeah, I have to remember that at that time period in the 19th century, death was so much more common and part of everyday life. People dealt with it on such a regular basis, and I think in some ways were much more comfortable with it. And that's why they put so much expense into it. It was important to them, especially if they had the means, to be remembered and to build these monuments to themselves, to tell the stories of themselves, and to build these huge properties for their families, which often had lots and lots of, as you said, children buried in them. And, you know, this is a time when people lived here. They lived nearby. They would go and visit their loved ones very, very regularly. That's just generally speaking in this country today, that's not the case anymore. Once we bury people today, that's kind of the last time we'll ever go and visit them, unfortunately. And so I think Laurel Hill represents just a very different time period in mourning and death and funerary rites. And that's one of the things that makes it so interesting.
Well, we're running out of time. What do you want to say?
So I would just like to invite anyone who is interested in the cemetery in Laurel Hill and has never been before to come on out. It's a very friendly, welcoming place. We're open 7 days a week, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. We encourage you to come, to bring your friends, to wander the site, and to really discover the place on your own. We're happy to help you. We have an office there on site in our gatehouse, and we're happy to answer any questions you have. But I do encourage you to come and see it for yourself, because there's really nothing like it in the area. But thanks so much for having me, Laura.
Oh, you're always welcome back. And before you get away, though, who is the most famous person not buried at Laurel Hill Cemetery?
Well, it's got to be Adrienne Balboa. As some of you may know, Adrienne is, of course, the character who is the wife of Rocky Balboa in all the Rocky movies. And several of the last movies in the franchise have been filmed at Laurel Hill. And so we actually have a real granite headstone with her name on it, because she's supposed to be buried there, even though there's, of course, no one buried underneath it. It's just a prop, but it is a real stone, and people love coming and taking their picture next to it, and we love having those people.
And of course, for more information about everything that we have talked about and all the stuff we didn't get around to, because with 76,000 residents, there are about 76,000 great stories to be told. You will find it all at the laurelhillcemetery.org. They have an app. You can download that, make your own tour. You'll also find out information about becoming a member of the Friends and all the great events, from the movie nights, the circus, the soul tours at around Halloween, the Gravediggers Ball, I think I mentioned, and of course the great 5K, the Rest in Peace 5K, coming October 5th, up and down those 3 miles of paved roads at the Laurel Hill Cemetery. You find it all there, the laurelhillcemetery.org. And we had the executive director of the Friends of Laurel Hill Cemetery and West Laurel Hill Cemetery. Nick McAllister is my guest today. I'm Laura Lewis. This has been our Delaware Valley.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.